Hello and welcome to the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. I'm your host, Eric English. This is episode number 2, July, Friday the 13th of 2018. Thanks for joining us today. This is just our second episode, so we're still kind of kicking things off here. For those of you that don't know who I am and where I've been in my travels throughout my career, I started in IT, working for a college, and I did IT there for a couple of years. From there, I moved on to a managed services company, and I worked there for about 7 years, almost 8 years. And then ever since that, I've been in information security, so about 6 years in InfoSec. So I've also been on red teams and I've been on blue teams, so I've seen it kind of from both sides. I'm super passionate about cybersecurity in general. I'm also extremely passionate about cryptocurrency, and those two topics seem to merge quite a bit, especially with all the hackers requesting to get paid in various forms of crypto. I also have a mining rig at home. I have 12 GPUs. I'm mining away at home. So I'm very much into the whole mining aspect of crypto as well. I kind of did it as an experiment at first and just really, really fell in love with it. And I've just been doing it ever since. Anyway, I've been doing the crypto stuff for about 2 years now. Been mining pretty much that whole time, so I just kind of built up my rig over time, and you know, started with just one GPU and built my way all the way up to 12 GPUs. I've kind of since stopped since the market's not doing so high right now, but either way, I do really enjoy it. So we are going to touch on various news topics throughout this podcast, and on various episodes we'll hit various news topics, and we're also going to talk about things that I've experienced at work, whether it's through incidents that happen at work, incident response, all that kind of fun stuff, things that we're doing to help defend our network. You can never really do enough, right? And budgets always seem to get in the way of really being super duper secure. But, you know, we have to do our best with what we're given. And so hopefully I can provide some insight into what my company's doing to protect our assets and protect our information, you know, as best we can without breaking the bank too bad. So I'm going to go ahead and start in with some news topics. There's been quite a bit of hacking going on lately and just all kinds of crazy news. I wanted to touch on the Ticketmaster hack. Ticketmaster got hacked quite a while back through a third-party app called Social Plus. This just kind of underscores the scary part of these third-party vendors and applications. You can think about Facebook and the Cambridge Analytica thing. You know, it was all through a third-party app. And same thing has happened here with Ticketmaster. They were breached by a vendor. Social Plus was breached first. And through that, they were able to get into Ticketmaster and breach their information. So pretty sneaky stuff what these hackers are doing nowadays, and they're finding ways to get in that you never really would have thought of. So the things that really come to mind for me is these vendors. And you give them access, and I don't know, you know, what level of access Social Plus had. I'm assuming it was pretty big to be, you know, the catalyst for getting these hackers into Ticketmaster. But, you know, if you're a software vendor or you have a platform that that other vendors are going to connect into, why would you give them too many permissions? Why would you give them so much that they could, you know, potentially take you down? Or why would you give them so much that if they got hacked, you would end up getting hacked? Why would you not limit and restrict what all they had access to? Sure, it might be a pain in the rear to, you know, restrict all their access, but, you know, personally, I'd rather spend the time restricting their access and preventing them from getting to the sensitive information rather than getting hacked because they got breached. So, you know, it's kind of shame on Ticketmaster for that. You know, I don't know all the details. I'm not involved in it, but I'm looking at it from 30,000 foot view, and that's kind of my take on it. You really have to watch all your vendors. You know, you have to do, especially with software vendors, you have to do some sort of risk assessment on those vendors and assess that vendor's security and say, okay, you know, this vendor is, for example, let's say, oh, they're a startup company and they don't have, you know, anything as far as security goes. Well, you know, you might think twice about letting them have, you know, full access to your database. Whereas, you know, you think of a corporation like, you know, AT&T or Facebook or whoever it is, you might think a little, you know, less about the security on that aspect because they're more likely than not, they're more secure than a startup firm. So, you know, you have to do the research and you have to do the digging into these vendors and seeing what, you know, what controls they have in place. Because without that, they're going to get breached and boom, Ticketmaster got breached. So it just goes to show that you really have to watch those vendors. Risk assessments are just so important in the information security space. And just restricting access, limiting that access. And even, you know, I might even go as far to, you know, for the Social Plus folks, take the information that they need and dump it into a non-production database. And maybe, you know, sync that data once a week or whatever Social Plus needs. But don't give them full fettered access to everything that you have. Dump it into a secondary non-production database of information that just they need. And even restrict that too. Restrict that even further. But that way they're not into your primary database and, you know, and really, you know, giving you that risk of taking you down and getting hacked. So anyway, vendor management comes to mind with that kind of stuff. And, you know, all the Facebook apps that it's driving me nuts, all this Facebook stuff. You know, the hashtag delete Facebook movement is getting bigger and bigger. And they're giving us more and more reasons to want to delete our Facebook accounts. There's been so many of these third-party apps. The most recent that you probably saw was TimeHop. TimeHop was hacked. Due to, I believe it was lack of multi-factor. We'll get into that here in just a second. But about 21 million users were affected by the TimeHop hack. And again, this is another Facebook application that's you know, built into Facebook that's using your data through Facebook. And here they go. They got hacked. 21 million people. Boom. I guess the good news with the TimeHop hack, if you want to call it good news, the breach really only consisted of names, email addresses, and phone numbers, which, you know, yes, that sucks because they're probably going to get a bunch of spam calls now, but, you know, at least it wasn't their home address and it wasn't their social security number and, you know, other things like that. So I guess that's an upside, if you want to call it that, but they shouldn't have been breached. And, you know, the reports are that it was due to a lack of a multi-factor account on an admin account, lack of multi-factor on an admin account. why in this day and age people aren't using multi-factor for their admin accounts is just mind-boggling to me. I can't tell you how many times in my previous job that I would go on site to these clients and we're reviewing their controls, and you start digging around and you find out that they're logging in with their domain admin account to their workstation, and that's their daily account that they're using. They're not even separating that out. You know, just big security no-nos. And when you tell them to separate it out, they freak out and think, oh my God, this is a pain in the butt. I don't want to do this. Why? Why would you not want to protect yourself? Especially some of the clients that I worked with, they were financial institutions. Why would you not want to protect your assets, protect your money? And a little tiny inconvenience of not logging in with a domain admin account, God forbid, one little thing like that could save you guys a major breach. And I try to explain that to people, and you know, obviously they don't want to hear it. And some of them would just ignore our advice and ignore our recommendations, and they would continue logging in with that domain admin account to their workstation and use it every day. You know, to me, you separate those accounts, number one. You separate your domain admin account from your day-to-day account. And your day-to-day account should just be a standard account. You elevate privileges only when necessary. You're not logging in as an admin. You're also not a local administrator. You know, all those permissions should be removed for your day-to-day account. And that goes for everybody in your organization, not just admins. But being that admins have access to so much more, it's even that much more imperative that they separate those accounts and sign in with that standard account. Because if they get breached, that's even more information that's going to get out. And you know, a breach of a domain admin account, you're owned. That's going to shut down your company, and you might as well just blow up your network and start completely over, which you're going to have to do. So, you know, that's step one, separating those administrator accounts. And TimeHop, you know, I'm not sure if they were doing that or not, but their problem was lack of multi-factor. Now, to me, multi-factor is just a no-brainer, right? I don't just use multi-factor for admin accounts. I use it for everything, every platform that I log into that allows me to do multi-factor, boom, I'm turning it on. I've got the Google Authenticator app, and I'm using that for everything that I can possibly use it for. You know, I don't leave anything to chance. At my current job, I've been pushing the initiative to roll out multi-factor to admin accounts, and we have started doing that with the use of Okta. We do have Okta for single sign-on, which single sign-on scares me too a little bit. But at least we are doing multi-factor with all of the IT admins. And we're also, Okta finally came out with, after numerous requests, Okta finally came out with multi-factor for RDP. It only took them 300 times of me asking them, hey, we need this, hey, we need this, hey, we need this, and they kept telling us, oh, you can get a third-party Radius server and blah, blah. I'm like, no, we have Okta. We want to use your product. So we're using Okta. We just started rolling out the multi-factor for RDP connections as well. That way, when all of our admins, not only when they sign into their computer, but when they start remoting into our servers and our infrastructure, boom, they get prompted for multi-factor there as well. And in the case of TimeHop, multi-factor could have helped prevent this breach. And it really boggles my mind that more people don't secure these. This is very basic security, multi-factor. Yeah, it might cost you a little bit, but you know what? There's other products besides Okta that do this. and really just do it on your privileged accounts. You know, there's tools like Duo. Duo's another one. You can use RSA. That's really expensive. You know, you can use all kinds of things like that to implement multi-factor for these high privileged accounts. And why people don't do that this day and age just really boggles my mind, because, you know, passwords are going to get leaked, passwords are going to get hacked, and the next thing you know, you could be compromised. The greatest part about multi-factor, who cares if they have your password? You can have it. You can't get in. You don't have my you know, my RSA key, or you don't have my Google Authenticator app. So, you know, to me, it's just a no-brainer for everything. So, for all of you out there listening, as some personal advice, go turn on multi-factor. Download Google Authenticator. There's other apps. Microsoft has their own. There's one called Authy. That's another one. It's A-U-T-H-Y. They have an app for your phone. Turn this on, folks, please. Just turn it on. Turn it on for your critical accounts. You know, people's Facebooks are getting hacked all the time. People's emails are getting hacked all the dang time. If you had multi-factor for your Facebook account, even if you got your password leaked, they can't get in. Same thing goes for your email. You leak your password for your email, they can't get in if you have multi-factor. Turn it on. I'm going to put some links in the show notes today for how to turn on multi-factor for several different platforms. There's some great articles out there on the web for how to do this. So I will post a few of those in the show notes today for everybody, so you can go home and do it for your personal stuff. Don't be like TimeHop. Don't get hacked. you know, get the multi-factor turned on. Get Google Authenticator, Authy, or the Microsoft Authenticator, whatever it is. At bare minimum, and I kind of recommend against this, but it's better than nothing. You know, have your whatever platform send you a text message where you have to type in a code. That's better than nothing, right? I know that NIST has recently come out within the last, I think, year or so and said, don't do your third party or your multi-factor with a text message. You know, they've already come out and said that's not secure. But in my eyes, you know, I'm much more, I like to think of myself as a lot more practical, because I'm in the industry doing it every day, and I understand the headaches and the hassles, and I know what IT admins and security admins are going through, because I'm going through it as well. But, you know, yes, somebody's phone could get compromised through the wireless provider. They may call Verizon and pretend like they are, you know, John Smith, and take over their Verizon account, activate phones and their name, and then boom, they can get that third party or that multi-factor text. But, you know, to me, that's better than absolutely nothing. That's better than just your username and your password, folks. So turn it on. Please turn it on. If you don't have this stuff turned on for like your bank accounts and things like that, and you get hacked, I don't feel sorry for you, folks. Turn it on. It's just a no-brainer. Don't be like TimeHop. So that's kind of touching on the two, the Ticketmaster and the TimeHop hacks that have recently happened. We also kind of touched on the Facebook third-party apps. And, you know, that bothers the crap out of me, because people don't read the permissions that those apps need. So I strongly recommend to get into your Facebook settings. Facebook actually released a privacy checkup tool. Just run through that real quick. You know, secure your account. Get rid of those, you know, applications that you're not using anymore. Those, whatever, the time hops and, you know, other crap that post on your behalf and, look at your friends list and gather information about you and all your friends, go ahead and turn those off, please, folks, because a new one's coming out every week where, oh, guess what? This Facebook app just leaks, you know, 71 million user accounts, and oh, wait, this one just leaked 21 million, and oh, here's Time Hop. Come on, guys. Seriously. I know these quizzes and crap might be fun or whatever, but let's take a step back and think about the privacy aspect of this. You know, is it worth it to have a little bit of fun to compromise you and all your friends? Not really. If I'm your friend and I know that you use Time Hop, guess what? Unfriend. I'm not going to be your friend anymore. You know why? Because of you, I was compromised. My information was compromised because of you. I don't like that. Okay, all these quizzes, I even unfriended my own mother because she posted all these dang quizzes, and I'm like, no, 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 not at all. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to allow these third-party apps to get what little information I have on Facebook. I don't want that. These third-party apps can go and read my posts because you guys are allowing them to. You know, I don't really post anything on there anymore, but nonetheless, think about all the people that do. They post their lives on there, and if one of these apps has access to it through one of your friends, you know, that's crazy, right? I mean, anybody that does this nowadays, you're not going to be my friend anymore, and I'm sorry. Unfriend. Only reason I haven't hashtag deleted my Facebook account, my wife doesn't want me to. I know what you're thinking. What a pansy. But, you know, she likes to post pictures of the kiddos, and our families are spread apart and blah, blah, blah. So fine, I'll keep it, but I just don't post anything, and I barely have any information about myself out there. So just look out for those third-party apps, folks. Do that Facebook privacy checkup, please. And clear those games and apps that you've given access to. You'd be surprised how many there are. You know, these things were rampant. And I mean, just all over the place. There was a new one coming out every day. So go in there, do that privacy checkup, and get rid of those apps. So moving on, yesterday I kind of touched on the developer, the cryptocurrency exchange developer, Bancor, that also got hacked. They lost $23.5 million in various cryptocurrencies. I think about 12 of that was Bitcoin, and the rest was various other currencies. But, you know, basically what these developers did is they coded a backdoor into their smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain. Now, why in the world would you hard code a backdoor into anything, number one? And if you're going to do that, why would you store $23.5 million in a place where you've got this back door? I mean, maybe it just seems too simple when you step back and you know, I'm obviously on the outside looking in, but I think about that. I'm